Good afternoon. It's 6 minutes past one, and you're listening to Dialogue here on WUOT, Knoxville 91.9 FM. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. Today, my guests are Kim Loth and Wendy Pitts Reeves. They're both members of the East Tennessee Women's Leadership Council. They're joining me today to talk about women's issues in Tennessee. This is sort of a preview of the Leadership Summit in Knoxville that takes place next Friday. And the Leadership Council is sponsoring that. So we're going to talk about the agenda for the summit and then touch on all of those issues that will come up at the summit and that are on women's minds around the state. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
It's my pleasure to have you. Thank you for being here. Kim, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and give us a little background.
Sure, of course. My name is Kim Loth. I'm the owner of Kim Loth Consulting, a nonprofit consulting firm here in East Tennessee. I have about 20 years of nonprofit experience, most recently as Chief Operating Officer of the Girl Scout Council of the Southern Appalachians. I'm also the president of the League of Women Voters for Knoxville, Knox County, and involved also, of course, with the summit. So it's very exciting for me to be here and wonderful to have this opportunity to talk about the summit and what we're doing here in East Tennessee.
Thanks again for being here. Wendy?
I'm Wendy Pitts Reeves. I'm a licensed clinical social worker in private practice in Maryville. I'm the founder of Cove Mountain Counseling, which is an association of independent practitioners over there. I also am a life coach, and I do a lot of work around with women around confidence issues, that kind of thing. But the main thing I'm doing and the reason I'm here is I chair the East Tennessee Women's Leadership Council, which is a group of really committed volunteers who are working every year to bring this event to East Tennessee, the Leadership Summit that's happening next week.
So the Leadership Council, what is the main goal of the council? What does it do?
The main thing that we're doing is promoting the summit. The summit, as some people will remember, this was an outgrowth of the work of the Tennessee Economic Council on Women, which is a state agency that has 21 volunteers who are appointed by the governor and speakers of the House and Senate. And that group works on assessing and addressing economic issues for women across the state. They hold a big statewide summit in Nashville every year that's been going on for a long time. And when I served on that group, we were asked to start a regional summit in our area to address issues in the rural parts of the state.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we started that this is our seventh year. So 7 years ago, I held with a small group, a different group of volunteers, it's evolved over time, the Economic Council on Women, and then our Summit for Women. And then last year, we completely changed the whole thing with some new input and new ideas coming on board and decided to expand the focus to look at leadership issues and how we can help women basically step into their authority, become their best selves, bring that to work, and really kind of do what they need to do to encourage and grow the economy, their families, all kinds of things like that.
As you said before the show started, there's going to be a large corporate presence summit.
I'm pretty excited about that. It says something about why this matters. Last year we had just a few corporate tables in terms of local companies buying tables for their women employees. This year that has increased four times as much. And which tells me that companies in the Knoxville, Knox County region, this is all the counties around Knoxville, are beginning to understand that it is to their benefit to bring women to an event where they come back to work learning how to ask for more, believe in themselves, step into more, reach for positions that come open, take on projects that they couldn't take on before, learn how to negotiate. The companies, corporations do better when their female employees do better. Mm-hmm. And that's beginning to catch on, I can tell.
We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines, 974-5050, 974-5050, if you have a question for Kim and Wendy. We're starting to get into, when we're talking about, women stepping up, taking on more responsibility, mm-hmm. going for positions that they wouldn't normally go for. Mm-hmm. We have to talk about, of course, wages mm-hmm. and opportunities for women to actually do that.
Right.
And I think a lot of the issues for women in Tennessee
just like, you know, for men, a lot of them are interrelated.
Yeah.
And wages, I'm sure, have a lot to do with poor health and poverty and crime and all of the other issues that we see in Tennessee. Domestic
and education.
Violence, education. So let's talk a little bit about the summit and the agenda for the summit.
Okay.
What exactly are you going to be focusing on?
Well, you may remember last April, I think it was, Forbes magazine came out with a report that said that Knoxville was the third worst city in the country for the wage gap, for what women earned relative to men. And that started a conversation among my group, among this group. And we decided to build the summit around that issue, closing that gap. So the theme for this year is closing the gap. And we're talking specifically about how to help women close the gap personally and professionally in terms of wages, in terms of confidence, and in terms of leadership skills. So it's a really high energy packed day. The keynote speaker this year is Nikki Giovanni, who is a Knoxville native that will be a familiar name to a lot of folks. She was named by Oprah as one of 25 living legends. She's coming here from Virginia Tech. I cannot wait to hear her. But she's kind of the highlight of the day. But we also have Deb Sofield, who teaches, who does all kinds of things. But she has taught at the Kennedy School of Government and at Yale Campaign School for Women. She is an executive coach who is an outstanding speaker. Folks are in for a treat if they've never heard her. And then we have all kinds of folks off and on during the day who are going to be addressing those issues, confidence, wages, and leadership in various ways.
Now, Kim, you're going to be speaking at the summit.
I am. I'm going to do a small session about embracing your value. The reality is that women view leadership differently than men do.
What do you mean?
Well, one of the cool things about working with the Girl Scouts was the access I had to the research that Girl Scouts nationally had done. And when they did all this research about girls in leadership, what they found was that girls are much more collaborative as leaders. They don't, command and control leadership doesn't resonate with girls. They don't feel like that they have women in power that they can look up to, because many of the women who are in power do practice command and control leadership because they've kind of been brought up that way.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Or they feel they have to act that way in order to keep their...
Exactly.
Right.
You know, to a girl, the definition of leadership is making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so important for girls to grow up having opportunities to make a difference and seeing themselves as a leader. One of the things that we've seen in my career, and I know Wendy has seen this in her career as well, is women never feel like they're valued, or they never really have embraced their value. I call it the imposter syndrome.
Yep.
You know, they can be a captain of industry and think, boy, if they really knew what I didn't know. You know, they don't feel very self-confident about their skill set, and it makes them settle, if you will, sometimes for less. Women are also not taught how to negotiate, which is it's part of the boy game. You know, growing up, boys are taught how to negotiate. Men love to go buy a new car and negotiate. Mm-hmm. That's a skill that most men take pride in, and one that women have just not been taught. So what happens is women don't negotiate for their first job out of college for the salary, and over a lifetime, that really costs them. So the session I'm doing about embracing your value is going to be talking about those kind of things, how to get yourself in a comfortable seat to negotiate, how to embrace the skills that you bring to the table and appreciate what those are worth, and really how to have that conversation. As someone who's supervised young women, I can't tell you the number of times a young woman has come to me and said, my life has changed in X way and I need more money.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come and say, I bring X value.
Yes.
And I deserve more money.
Yes.
So we need to talk about the value we bring.
Yeah.
And embrace that. So I'm pretty excited about the session.
That's very interesting. I never thought of just that one slight difference in perspective.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
974-5050, 974-5050, if you have a question or a comment for a conversation. Let's go back to that Forbes report just for a moment. How is it that the wage gap in Knoxville is so much worse than other cities?
Beats me. I don't have any idea. I don't know. I didn't go back and look at the background of that story. One thing I do kind of wonder, as when I served on the Economic Council, through that experience, I got to meet a lot of folks in other parts of the state, all across, all even Memphis and back. And in the other major metropolitan areas, there are a lot of activities and organizations that are working to promote women, encourage women to play a bigger role. In Nashville, there's a group called Cable that is huge and extremely effective, a really powerful business networking group. Chattanooga, Memphis has the University of, Center for Research on Women at the University of Memphis. There are lots of groups like that. There's not a lot of that around here. There are some small kind of fledgling groups, although I think that's changing. I'm an LCSW by training, and my personal thoughts is that a lot of it has to do with the culture, and East Tennessee culture is different than the rest. Mountain culture is different from Southern culture. So sometimes I think that comes into play.
What do you think the difference is?
Mountain culture, I should say I'm a native, okay? I'm from here, so I can say this. I've never thought about this until a few years ago. You know, we know kind of what Southern culture is, you know, in terms of the importance of faith, in terms of importance of family. Manners are important, being kind, all that kind of. But mountain culture is much more private and protected. Mountain culture is—it seems to me, you know, when folks lived in the hills, they didn't see a lot of folks from outside back in the day. And I think it's much more insular. And I sort of think that women—and this is from—I mean, I've been working with women for 20 years in various ways. It seems to me that women in this part of the country, in our part of the country, just, it's never occurred to them half the time to think that they could do more or should do more. You may or may not, I was on the Blount County Commission for a few years. And when I was in public office and I was out doing door to door, and I mean, I went to places that no one ever went to. I can't tell you how many women I met that said, "Oh, honey, I don't do that. My husband handles that. I don't vote, he votes, or I just vote the way he tells me." And these were good, solid, salt-of-the-earth people. It just had never occurred to them to do it any other way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, as you say, I mean, a lot of it is changing.
It's changing.
It's starting to change, and the number of women-owned businesses in Tennessee continues to increase every year. The revenue that those companies bring in increases every year.
Not enough,
but still, yeah. it's on the rise.
Yeah.
And so I guess in East Tennessee, that's gonna change too.
Well, I think small women-owned businesses are, last time I checked, were one of the smallest, the fastest growing segments according to the Small Business Administration for the country, and that is happening even here. What I'm looking for is a conversation that sort of pulls people together to look at this in our region and the whole, all 16 counties around East Tennessee is what I'm looking at. And I think that what we're doing with the summit is becoming kind of the centerpiece of that.
Sure.
But we're just a piece of it. The Women's Fund that the East Tennessee Foundation is doing, you know, they're working with women in 25 counties to try to make, to build this fund to make a measurable difference. I'm very excited about that. And I don't have a dog in that fight. I don't make anything for saying that. I just really believe in what they're about. And what I kind of have been hoping will happen is that the summit becomes sort of a central meeting point for invested people and organizations around this part of the state to come together and say, how can we work together? How can I help you? How can you help me? How can we help each of these companies? How can we promote women in these companies? So
it's almost like an economic report for
kind of
East Tennessee.
Like a hub.
Yeah.
Like a hub, a clearinghouse of information. And a network across county lines where women leaders are talking to each other across the counties. We're working consciously to make that happen.
So, yeah. Well, that's part of the summit, right?
Yeah,
it is networking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
And this is Kim. And the reality is that women don't have to be captains of industry to be leaders.
That's right.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that we can't measure is the value of an empowered woman over her lifetime. Whether or not she spends her time raising her children and investing in her community or running a business, you know, there's still impact there that's immeasurable over generations. So, you know, I think sometimes this discussion gets a little bogged down in, you know, well, I'm not a career woman or, I don't own a business or any of those things. But a woman who can affect change in her community and in her home makes a huge difference. And someone who has the confidence to do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's also, I mean, it's become almost a different conversation just in my working lifetime. Like, there's so many more women who are single parents,
yes,
head of household,
yes,
the only one working,
40%,
and more of them working, and more of them, period. I mean, in the population, we outnumber men. it's become a different conversation where it's not even about career anymore. It's about, I have to work, so I need to make as much as I can make.
I keep thinking this isn't about what's fair and nice and sweet. This is an economic reality, which is one of the numbers that I saw in a report from last year was that because right now you can sort of find different numbers if you look at different places, but roughly 77 cents on the dollar is what women seem to make right now in this region. If you add that up over a lifetime, one report I read said that by the time you're 45 years old, you've lost $122,000. And by the time you're 65, that's $375,000 more that your family could have made over the lifetime of your mom or your grandmother or your aunt or yourself. If I'm a man and my wife is not making the same as her male counterparts and she's got the same education, the same experience, the same credentials, has the same job, and she's making 30-something cents less on the dollar than he is, that hurts my family. Mm-hmm. And I said this to a businessman in my town one time. I want women to make the same thing as men so they can spend more money in your stores or at your gas station or at your sporting events. I want it affects all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
974-5050, 974-5050 if you have a question or a comment for Kim Loth or Wendy Pitts Reeves. They are both in the East Tennessee Leadership in Women's Leadership Council. We have Terry on the line. Terry, where are you calling from?
Christertown, Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Well, I have a statement. Wish the ladies luck on changing the ignorant paradigm that is against diversity and the many assets that would bring.
Thank you. Yes, we need that.
I don't know that it's ignorant. I don't know that I would say that. I think it's, although if you think of the literal meaning of that term, maybe. But I think it's just it's growth over time. It's culture. This is hard to change. This is generations of change. When I was in college here, back in the a really long time ago. I'll just say that when I was at UT back in the day, I had a button that said 59 cents on it,
mm-hmm.
right? Because women made 59 cents on the dollar, right? In one hand, it's really distressing that we're still having this conversation 30 right. years later. On the other hand, it is progress, and any progress is progress.
It is. Hey, Terry, thanks for the call. Going back to that particular number, in a lot of ways it has improved, but for Hispanic women, it's 52 cents on the dollar.
Yes, that's true.
So it's even less than that.
Yes, and for African-American women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, we definitely need to see some improvement there. We have Lida on the phone from Knoxville. Did I say your name correctly?
Yes.
Thanks for calling. What's your question?
I had a question and just a comment. One, I was interested in when the conference is, and is it only open to business people in the area, or you know what the how you go about registering for it?
Okay, we have that information for you, and I'll get that up on our website as well, Lida, later on today.
Okay,
but I'm gonna hang up on you, but Wendy is gonna answer that question right now. Okay, thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Lida. That's my favorite kind of question. You can go to our website, and I will tell you it's not the greatest domain name, but it's easttnwomensls.com. Or if you just Google Women's Leadership Summit, you'll find it. And there's a registration button there. I will tell you that the registration deadline is the 7th, midnight on the 7th, which is only a couple of days away. After that, you'll have to register on site, and the price goes up on site. So I do go ahead and grab it while you can. And
so it's open to everybody.
It's open to everybody. And we talk about business, but honestly, like Kim said, if you're just if you're a mom at home, if you're a college student, if you are a hairstylist, it doesn't matter what level of business, what type of career, everyone, if you have a job, and even if your job is to raise and do the best you can at home, there's something here for everyone. And I'll just put a little plug in. It's a really fun day. We don't do it like anybody else.
No, it looks like, the speakers look phenomenal.
Not just the speakers. We have fun, too.
974-5050, 974-5050. If you have a question or a comment, we have Liz on the line from Oak Ridge. Liz?
Hi there. Hi. I just wanted to say that I am absolutely overjoyed to hear this topic and to hear the just very cogent arguments for pay equality. I've been in business for myself 4 times. I'm a total disaster. I'm too ADHD. I say more power to you.
At least you keep trying.
And the quality of the discussion is just wonderful, and I thank you all very much.
Thanks, Liz. Thanks
thank
for the
you.
Call.
Well,
we have India on the line from Knoxville. India, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question?
Well, I just also wanted to say thank you for having this topic on and for having the Leadership Council, making that happen. I'm an office holder in Knox County. I've been on the school board for 9 years now, and I applaud your efforts to support women in taking leadership roles, and also appreciate your comments on women being able to be leaders, whether it's captains of industry or captains in their communities and families and churches, because I think all those roles are very important. I also wanted to say I think language is a big issue for women in leadership roles, because as girls, sometimes girls who exhibit leadership characteristics are considered bossy, whereas
yes.
boys who can exhibit the same thing are considered, future leaders. And
right.
I think it's important to encourage girls and not call them bossy so much as, potential managers and so forth and that sort of thing.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Well, thank you for that, India. And thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, the language.
Language is huge. That's a brilliant point. I'm so glad she brought that up.
As a counselor,
mm-hmm.
I would think you'd be especially sensitive to the way that that language is used to
yes.
describe people.
Yes. And the way we describe ourselves.
Yes. So can we talk about that a little bit, especially, Kim, in reference to your upcoming talk on value?
Mm-hmm.
What is it important for not just women, but men to remember about, how we address each other and how we talk about value?
Well, it is very interesting. And working in nonprofits, I've often worked in groups of women. And one of the things that I've noticed women do is they'll say, let me introduce you to the girl who works in that department.
Mm.
You would, of course, never hear a man say about a work colleague, let me introduce you to the boy
yes.
who's going to be handling your account.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's a very small thing, I think, we teach people how to treat us.
Yes.
And so when we put out there that this is just a girl, then and don't use a title and don't, command respect, we've kind of gotten what we ask for.
It's such a subtle thing. This is Wendy. I used to have a colleague who would say, every time somebody would say girl when they were talking to an adult, she would say, you see a girl, you give her a dollar. And that was like a running joke she would say all the time. And I correct people on that constantly. And some folks will go along with me and kind of laugh about it. And some people will say, well, honey, I'd just as soon be a girl. I wish I was. But you're right. We have to take ourselves seriously in order to be treated seriously by others. And one of the words that I notice is the word power. Women are very uncomfortable with the word power. We think of power, and actually that same colleague, this was Annie Wills, that used to be one of my office partners a long time ago. She was the one that taught me this. She said, women think of the word power as power over instead of power to. And so when we talk about, you know, an opportunity comes along for you to step into a certain role, well, honey, I don't want to do that because I don't need that power. I'm not looking for power. Well, if you don't have any power, how are you going to change anything? You know, power is power is like money or like anger. It's what you do with it that counts.
Yeah.
Right.
And as India was saying too, it's not just the way that women think of power.
Yes.
It's the way that people think of power in relation to women. Mm-hmm.
And that is a really tricky thing.
Yeah.
There's lots of research that shows that the very same behaviors, if you have a man do it, if he's seen as take charge, strong, quote, leader. And when a woman does it, she's called bitchy or mean or dominant, mm-hmm. all those same kind of things. What I tell women all the time is quit apologizing for who you are. No apologies. They'll get used to it. We will find our own way. We don't have to copy men, like you were talking about command and control. We don't have to copy. We have our own. The things go better when you have all points of view. We need what men bring to the table. We need what women can bring to the table.
Sure.
I said this in an interview somewhere along the way, that the conversation changes when women are at the table. That's why we need both there. But being comfortable with our own authority and not apologizing for that, I think that's one way that we, like Kim just said, train other people to listen to us, respect us, value us. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it can be as simple as how we accept a compliment.
Yes. Brilliant.
You know, in the workplace, when someone says, that project was top notch, a woman is more inclined to say, I had a great team.
Mm.
Or, I really didn't do much, so-and-so. You know, really did more.
Don't do that.
rather than just saying thank you, thanks.
Yes.
And women just aren't really good at thanks. We're kind of taught to share.
Play small.
To play small, mm-hmm. exactly. And so, you know, the more often we can step up in that, and it's not about being, you know, bigger than you are or louder than you are, but it's about taking credit for the value that you do bring.
Yes.
We have another call. We have Jim on the line from Knoxville. Jim, are you there?
Yes.
What's your question?
My question would be, what have you seen any recent studies on the discrepancy, same job, same responsibility, et cetera, on the different pay grades between men and women? There was an Israeli study, this is 7 or 8 years ago, it was a PhD, spoke at McClung Tower. And someone asked him that question, and they had did a very. This is very expensive to study that stuff, because you got to do it over a long period of time. And what he said, it's there, the discrepancy, but it is much less than is actually in the paycheck, because women will accept a lower starting salary than men will.
Yes,
for example,
right.
A man will make an offer, and they'll say, "No, I'm going to move. I'm going to Tel Aviv to take, because they'll pay more in Tel Aviv." This was their Israeli study.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, after time goes by, the women proceed with raises, and the men proceed with raises. But if they start, if the women start at 25% less, then they are going to have, there's going to be a pay discrepancy, mm-hmm. almost a lifetime thing, because of the starting salary. That was one of the key to it. Then the other thing did have to do with more absentee, slightly more absentee among women. It's not that much, but it's there. Of course, pregnancy is pregnancy. You can't, and that is very, very difficult. You're going to have some more time off with men because of pregnancy, period. So
right.
It's not as bad as it looks. So, but I guess what I'm, then I will ask, have you seen a recent study, recent USA study, and it has to go like 10 years, even 20 years, because you've got to go back to that starting salary. Interesting program.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jim. We're gonna get to that. And actually, you know, what he's saying is, of course, as he says, is study over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the most recent study I saw, besides that little Forbes blurb from last April, was from 2007 or something.
The Tennessee Economic Council on Women, 2008, I think.
Okay.
I don't know. The studies that I'm familiar with, I think, are more snapshot pictures, mm-hmm. as opposed to, I think, I'm not a statistician, so I could be wrong about that. But his point that I thought was valid and important here was that there are many factors that impact this, you know. One of the things I'm always conscious of when we talk about the wage gap is I don't want people to hear it as this little woman in the corner whining, saying, why don't you be nice to me and pay me what... That there are a lot of things, and some of them are legitimate. Like when he talked about when women step out of a career to have children or raise a family, that does impact you over time, and that's a choice, and there's nothing wrong with that. Women settling for less right out of the gate, right out of college, that's a biggie. When he said that about 20, when you're starting off 25% behind, there are so many factors that go with that. I have seen this personally. When I had a position where I, when I was in a position to hire, I had a male apply for a position compared to women, several. I work in a female dominant industry, so you don't get as many men that apply in the counseling field. What the men would ask for in salary was eye-opening to me because it was so far higher than what the women would ask for. You know, when I would say, you know, what kind of salary are you looking for? What position, you know, what do you think? Right off the top, the men would ask for, like, what I was making as the department head.
Because they've been taught to negotiate, right?
Absolutely.
And because they think bigger, I think, you know? Yeah. That was really helpful for me to see that. And we don't know that. We don't even know that happens. So we kind of have a responsibility, I think, to learn ourselves, which is what you're saying.
Well, this is Kim. One of the things that I've noticed in my career, and part of my consulting practice focuses on fundraising, and that is that we've all been taught not to talk about money.
Yeah.
You know, and as women particularly, it's like we're raised better than that.
Yeah.
You know, we don't ask how much things cost.
That's a Southern thing.
You know, it's a very... taboo subject to sit around and talk about money. So it makes it even more difficult for us to have the kind of discussions we need to have about salary negotiations and all those things. You know, I'd also like to say that this goes so far beyond being fair.
Yes,
you know, it's not about being fair. It's about the fact that gender-balanced leadership makes the world a better place.
Yes.
When you have gender balance at the table, companies make more money, mm-hmm. communities are better, and everything works in a better way because you have the brain trust at the table that it takes to do the job.
Yes. And it's already changed the way that a lot of business is done.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like we've talked about the power, you know, the command, and that a lot of men don't work that way anymore because there's so many more women involved that... It seems like business is a lot more collaborative anyway.
And creative and responsive and flexible.
Yeah.
Yes.
The number's 974-5050, 974-5050. If you have a question or a comment for our conversation about women's issues, we're focusing particularly on economics and getting ready for the Leadership Summit next Friday. There is a little bit of information about that on our website at wuot.org, and you can also find a link to the summit and registration page. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. You're listening to Dialogue on WUOT Knoxville.
Whistleblowing's not a crime!
Controversy over the trial of Private Bradley Manning.
He told the truth, he put his head up there, and now it's on the chopping block.
The prosecution is alleging that Manning basically started to leak information and started to work with WikiLeaks almost from the moment he got to Iraq.
The trial of Bradley Manning, follow it on PRI's The World.
This evening at 7 on WUOT2.
You're listening to Dialogue on WUOT, Knoxville, 91.9 FM. It's about 20 minutes before 2. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. My guests today are Kim Loth and Wendy Pitts Reeves. They are both on the East Tennessee Women's Leadership Council, and the council is hosting a summit next Friday at the Knoxville Airport Hilton. It's a day-long leadership summit for women, but, you know, everybody's invited to go.
Yes.
And you can find registration information at our website at WUOT www.ncpsummit.org and a link to the summit page. Let's take one call before we get into our next topic. Dean is on the line from Sevierville. Hey, Dean.
Hey there.
What's your question?
How much do you think that male attitudes, men's attitudes impact still the difference in pay scales or opportunities for women versus men?
That's a good question. Thanks for the call, Dean. We're gonna tackle that one. All right.
My first thought is I need to ask a man that. that is a great question. And I don't know that I know the answer. My first thought is that it's not as big a factor as it used to be. I don't know. What do you think, Kim?
I'm not sure that it's as big a factor as it used to be, but I do think that it's hard to be Margaret Thatcher in a Paris Hilton world. So, you know, when our society says that this is how you get attention and this is how you become famous and this is how you show up, and you get this attention for being, you know, a Paris Hilton. And then you're Hillary Clinton or you're someone else, and the attention you get can be very different.
Yeah.
And sometimes very less positive.
That's a good point. I'm thinking I've had experiences as a fairly outspoken woman that people don't always, men are not always comfortable with women.
But
who,
then there,
as far
that,
as that goes.
That goes for women too.
Yeah, it does.
I mean,
it
I know
absolutely
a lot
does.
Of women who are intimidated by outspoken women.
That's true. And sometimes women are our own worst enemies, which is kind of where I go with that question. I always think, you know, I think Kim's got a good point. There are unconscious attitudes we all have, whether we know it or not. And there are organizational biases that are built in. I wouldn't do this, but I know of companies, large and small, that have built in policies that are not fair in terms of pay for women and for girls, even starting at the adolescent level.
Yeah.
But where I tend to go is that, you know, so that's the way it is. That's the way it is. I can't do anything about that. All I can do is something about what I bring to the table and how I address it. And that's where I want women to look at. So if you work in an organization that has, well, goodness, I was thinking about Lilly Ledbetter. That's a really good, Lilly Ledbetter with Goodyear and the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. That's a pretty good example of built-in organizational policies that really hurt the women in that company. And I'm going to say that because this is all out in the public. You can read her book and hear her story. It's very powerful.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
She worked for, she was the keynote at the state summit last year, and I got to meet her, and she was a lovely individual from Alabama near Gadsden. She worked at a Goodyear plant there for, I want to say 19 years, something like that. And the way I recall the story, and don't hold me to this because I'm not looking at it in writing, but the way I recall it was that on or near her retirement, like at her retirement party or as she was leaving the planet, moving on, someone put a note in her locker that told her what the men were making compared to what she was making. And she had been, as I recall, she was like a supervisor or a line leader, team leader, had kind of moved up a little bit and was a hard worker, had always gotten really good evaluations. And it was, she would never have known that. And to this day, she doesn't know who put that note in her locker. Long story short, she went to file a grievance, sued the statute of limitations or whatever the law was. She could not, they couldn't, didn't have to do anything about it. They never denied that it happened, but they didn't have to pay her. And in the end, it went all the way to the Supreme Court. She lost because the law said, yeah, they did. They should have paid, but they, the best term I can think of is statute of limitations. There's another term that's, I'm sure that's not right. But the gist of it was, yeah, they did do this, but they don't have to make it up. And now the law has been changed. That's what the Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, that law has been changed. Her husband died in that process. She lost thousands of dollars. It took everything she had to fight that fight. She got nothing for it. But she would never have known that was happening if someone hadn't. So, yeah, that does happen in an institutional way.
Yeah.
So the best thing we can do is, you know, help each other, speak up when we know about it and address it. I've had it happen to me. You probably have too.
I have. I've actually had it happen to me in where I had a female supervisor during review time make a comment about making sure that women who didn't have husbands, you know, got a bigger part of the salary pie.
Wow.
And that's just, you know, been in the last 15 years or so.
Yeah, and I had it happen where I found out that a male colleague was making significantly more than I was with the same, with virtually identical experience and credentials. And when I went to, it was a small company, and when I went to the HR folks and asked them about it, I said, just help me understand why, how this is and how you can justify this, and they couldn't. So they gave me a raise. But in the end, you know, it takes all of us. We need men to be sensitive to this and aware of it, because we cannot do this without their help. But we also have to challenge it when we can, not back down, not be afraid. It's scary to speak up. It's scary to challenge an institution. It's scary to show your knowledge or your abilities in front of folks, because they don't always appreciate it. But you know what? You gotta do it anyway.
But, you know, this is Kim, to the caller's point about it, about men and,
yes,
you know, the men's role in all this,
mm-hmm,
you know, as a mother, I can tell you I've had a much easier time raising strong daughters than I've had raising sons that treat women with respect and dignity and as equals,
mm-hmm,
simply because the societal pressure for a young man to treat women otherwise is so great.
Mm.
Still. That's disheartening.
It is, and it's really challenging. And you know, I hope I'm doing a good job at that. Mm. But you know, the reality is that kind of, you know, good old boy, you know, locker room talk stuff still happens. And, you know, those kids don't leave all that behind when they get their first job.
Right.
Yeah. We all have a responsibility to make things better.
Especially if they fall into a first job that's very, you
macho,
know, one of those jobs that, you know, only women do or only men do. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. We have Forrest on the line from Maryville. Forrest, are you there?
Hello, yes, I am.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, a quick question, and then also maybe a little resource. I read a book called The E-Myth, which was real helpful to me managing my small business. But there's a kind of an unfortunate aspect to it in that it's a hypothetical business coaching situation, and the coach is a male, and the business owner is a woman, Sarah, who runs All About Pies. And although the nature of what the business is she's being coached on really doesn't matter to the story, I noticed it as I read it, that the author chose something that was a little condescending, perhaps, and I was wondering if there might be some other business coaching books that the host may have read that might be free of that bias. And then before they answer that, I want to offer a resource.
Okay.
I'm a physicist by education. I practice as an electrical engineer. There are not many women in our profession.
Right.
And I've recently become aware of a marvelous resource. It's part of this maker movement, people who, you know, actually fabricate stuff with these 3D printers. And there's a woman who runs a website. It's called Adafruit. That's Adafruit. And her name is, I think it's Lamor, Limor, and last name is Fried, Fried. And if I had some young women, daughters, I would encourage all the viewers to go find that website and make sure their daughters see this woman as a role model.
Okay. Thanks for that, Forrest.
All right.
And we'll answer.
If you guys got something comparable to E-Myth to recommend, I'll go listen to the radio.
We will answer that for you. Thanks for the call.
Thanks much. Bye then.
All right. So, sources.
Christy, this is Kim. The one that I want to mention that I just finished recently is Lean In, the Sheryl Sandberg book. That it's getting a lot of press, and people have differing opinions about the content. But, you know, there's a lot of resources that are attached to the book that you can find online that are also very helpful. But the big thing about all this is creating dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a huge opportunity for dialogue. So I really have been recommending that a lot lately.
What about you, Wendy?
I'm just grinning because I know Forrest, and we've had a lot of conversations about the E-Myth. I read that back when I started my practice 20 years ago. It is a good book, but he's right about the bias built in. The first one that jumped to my mind is actually a book I read last year called The Loudest Duck. And it's written by a woman named Laura Liswood, who was a speaker at the State Summit, who was an impressive person. She interviewed all the women heads of state in the country, in the world. There were 14 around the world. And she's quite a character. And the in The Loudest Duck, she talks about the importance of culture. And when we look at diversity and what we think of as bias, how one thing means one thing in one culture and something else somewhere else. And where the phrase, the title comes from, is that in our country, we say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Well, in China, they say the loudest duck gets shot. Right? And she talks about how when you're putting a team together, that you have to take into consideration the cultural backgrounds of your team members. And Kim brought up something. I started to say this a minute ago how about women not taking credit for themselves, that when you have a team together and you're looking at who you're going to promote, you've got a team that's done really, really well, and you want to bring someone out of that position, that team, to move into a different position. The male culture is about, look at me, what I did. I scored. I shot the three-pointer. You know, I made the long bomb that scored the winning touchdown. It's all about me. But women will not do that. They will say, I had a great team. I had somebody behind me. And she said, from a cultural perspective, as a position, if you're in a position to promote, you need to remember that about the people. So that book talks about that a whole lot. I thought it was a fascinating book.
Let's take one more call. We're starting to run out of time. So we have Jack on the line from Knoxville. Jack,
Hi.
Are you there?
Hi. I had a question and a comment. A comment, one thing I was going to say was, a big thing that's helped me be confident, I'm in my early 20s, was that I did Girl Scouts for years and actually got my gold award. It was something I had to work really hard on. And it kind of helped me learn how to find my voice, mm-hmm. even though it was a very, like, female-populated kind of space. It felt like a safe space where I could learn these skills. Thinking on that, I've been thinking about this a lot, not just advice for myself on, there's been a lot of that, but how I can help women that are older than me, like, realize, like you were saying, a lot of women in our culture in this area have not really realized how things could be different, mm-hmm. and kind of showing a way, I guess I would say, for, like, women younger than me, if you guys have any specific advice, just kind of how directly I could help people out.
Great. And actually, we're going to address that right now, Jack. Thanks for the call. All right. So last thoughts, because we are running out of time, but what can we do? What can we do to help our fellow women feel better and be more confident?
This is Kim. I think for me, the most important thing for people is to be bold. Step out, do something you didn't think you could do. Take a chance, take a risk. By doing that, not only do you build your own confidence, but you inspire other people around you. And, I appreciate the caller so much commenting on Girl Scouts. I'm a huge fan of Girl Scouts and everything that they do for young women. But that's what they do. They get people to step out, young women to step out beyond what they think they can do. So, and you never get too old for that.
Right.
I recently did the half marathon here in Knoxville, and that was a huge experience for me and one that I will reap the benefits of for years to come. Mm-hmm. So do something you didn't think you can do. It doesn't always have to be a midlife crisis to get you to try something new.
Well, and thinking along those lines, too, it seems like it'd be more important for older women to think that way, because often the opportunity, there are fewer opportunities for, you know, women in their 30s, 40s, 50s, yeah. to get out and do different things. And not only that, but we are so hung up in our habits that we've been for years. So now, Wendy, you...
My secret adventures.
You take women on adventures. So let's talk about that.
Well, I'm thinking, Jack's, I love her question. And I love the fact that she's thinking, how can I help and encourage other people? Because one of the keys, honestly, is how we lead each other. encourage and support each other. And one way you can do that is by literally grabbing somebody to come with you when you're doing something scary or pushing someone. I have been pushed so many times by women that I admire and respect who said, yes, you can do this. Of course you can do this. And I'm going, no, I can't. Are you kidding? I can't do that. I can't tell you. I could tell you so many stories along those lines. So literally when you challenge someone else to do something that you think they can step into and they don't have the confidence, to offer to help them do that. I'll be there with you. I'll drive you to the interview. I'll give you the pep talk before you go in. I'll be there when you come out. I'll help you practice. If you're going to run for office, I'll be your campaign manager. I'll be your number one volunteer to support and encourage that way. What you were just talking about, a couple of years ago, I started something called Secret Adventures for Courageous Women that I do. And you know I've been a counselor for a long time. Mm-hmm. But in my counseling practice, I have found that I've had huge success when I could convince women to take trips, to travel, because travel automatically challenges so many different things. And a couple of years ago, I decided I was just going to take them myself. And so every month, I take folks out, and we do all kinds of crazy things. It may be contra dancing or kayaking. It may be taking a painting class. It may be hang gliding.
And you did hang gliding last year.
I did hang gliding last year, which I really, really loved. but, you know, and most of the women who I'm doing these things with are 40s and 50s. I've had folks up into their 70s. And what they tell me all the time was, I never knew I could do this. I had no idea I could do this. And even if you can, it doesn't matter. Your confidence grows just because you tried.
Right.
And even if you fall on your face, you will have a great story to tell, well, except from hang gliding. We don't want to fall from there.
But, and that's for everybody.
Yes,
that's
for
not
everybody.
Not just for women, but, yeah.
All ages,
stepping out
all
of
genders.
Your zone.
Yeah.
Well, again, the conference, the summit for the East Tennessee Women's Leadership Summit, that's next Friday at the Knoxville Airport Hilton.
8 o'clock.
There is a link on our website at wuot.org to the website where you can register if you are interested. And once again, a whole lineup of speakers. And also a reminder that the Tennessee Economic Council for Women does hold an annual summit in October.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in Nashville,
mm-hmm.
you said?
Mm-hmm. And that's a big one, too. That's really good.
Yeah.
And this year, they're partnering with Vision 2020, which is a nationwide program with the goal of making sure that we have parity by 2020, which is the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote. So that group
is pairing. So wage parity?
Wage parity, okay. And other all kinds of ways. So Vision 2020 is partnering with the council.
One quick, we're almost out of time. One quick question for you, Kim. As far as the League of Women Voters goes,
okay.
Are voting numbers for women approaching those of men in Tennessee?
You know, I don't know that I can answer that question.
Okay.
The league is very important. It continues to be very important. The main thing about the league is that we want to educate voters, and educated voters can have positive discourse, and that's important. So,
I think women make up 16 or 17% of the state legislature. They don't vote. They don't register to vote, and they don't vote at the same levels.
Get on that, ladies.
Yeah, that's another conversation.
Thanks again. We just want to thank Kim Loth and Wendy Pitts-Reeves for joining me today for Dialogue, and hopefully we'll do this again. And
love to.
There's never enough time to cover all the issues that I want to cover. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. Thanks very much to Greg Hill for production and for handling the phones for Dialogue, and thank you so much to all of you who called in to participate in the show today.